Hi, this is Santi Tosino, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Quick disclaimer, apologies. I only found out yesterday that the episode 13 didn't actually launch. So you'll be getting two for the price of one. Anyway, myself, Ed Price, Lawrence Landeray, Jim Harley this evening as we record on a Sunday after another disappointing performance and game and defeat. And we don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's not getting any better. We did have a bit of positivity, which was the women's game after, which Jim and I can talk about a bit in more detail. But Loz watched the men's game on the TV. Jim and I were in the stadium. I think the only thing for Loz was that he was in the warm. Loz, I'll start with you, mate.
Oh, excuse me, sorry. I think what we need to do is release the visuals at the start of this podcast when you were doing the announcement then, because I think the way you rubbed your forehead and hair as you said about it, that tells all anyone needs to know about the state.
It was a real shame that you weren't recording at that point, because it would have been perfect.
Then let's start it then, yeah.
Go on, and let's just get on with it. Let's just start talking about that.
It is bad, isn't it? I mean, I'll start with you because, you know, we always do try and find the positives, and we don't overreact to wins, and we don't overreact to defeats. But I'm going to let you just go, Loz, because you were watching it, and I think your comment on the WhatsApp group summed it all up, really.
The positives are quite easy. There's no relegation, and and Newcastle are in the league, and they're worse than us, but somehow. That's the positives.
Yeah. Crack on.
That's how bad it's got.
Yeah.
You asked me before what we need to do to put it right, and the answer is becoming increasingly more towards a replacement in the coaching staff, which, for two things. One, I'm still torn over it, believe it or not, because I'm fed up of us ripping it up and starting again every two and a half, three seasons. Mm-hmm. But when it's this bad, it's like when Laurie Fisher was there and Nigel Davies, you just, unfortunately, just have to do it, don't you? Mm-hmm. Because it's just, you know, we're not seeing any improvement. If anything, we're getting worse. We're not as boring as we were. So this season is a much, much greater positive than last season, believe it or not, because we couldn't win last season. We were just awful to watch. This season, it's awful to watch for a different reason, because we're just not good enough. But it's a bit more entertaining. There are positives. We look like we could score, whereas Snowy's biggest fear was always that we couldn't score unless it was directly off first phase. We do look to seem to have a bit of multi-phase play and threat about us now. Mm. The thing is, and I think I touched on this before, when we were at that Mark Cummings do before the start of the season, we were talking to Lewis Ledlow, and he said about Lightfoot Brain, that he said it might seem simple what he's done, but he's just pointed out and made it us realise what we need to do with the attacking. Well, there were for quite a long period of time on Saturday, it seemed that our attacking play consisted of sling it wide without drawing and making any space as quickly as possible to Lewis Rees-Sammet and hope that he could work a miracle, because we didn't seem to have any attack later on, or certainly any answer to their defence. And I think teams have worked us out that we're going to do that out the back pass. The trouble is George Barton is sitting way too deep when it's coming in, and we're not getting that ball out quick enough, it seems. Teams are now nullifying that effect, and all that we're doing is getting increasingly more desperate with how we're getting the ball out, which means we're just going from one side of the pitch to the other without actually making any distance. In fact, yesterday was pretty much summed up everything you needed to see, where we must have gone 15 or 20 metres backwards from their defence by going from one side of the pitch to the other. And each time the passing backwards, they managed to tackle. When we did try and go forwards, they tackled us and we never got ahead of the game. I mean, in fact, we just went each phase 5 metres back. And we got one of the worst attacks, one of the worst defences. It's no wonder we're second from bottom.
Yeah, I mean, on the attacking side of things, But as I said before, I can see the structure. I can see what they're trying to do. But you quite rightly made the point, and we've kind of reiterated it before, that I'm not sure George Barton is comfortable being any flatter, which is what you need him to be. You need him flat for that line to give at least give an option, flat and deep, because everyone knows what's going to happen. The ball's going to go out the back. And then we're, 10 meters back from where we started from.
He had a perfect person to learn off last week against Bath, well, not last week, whenever it was, against Finn Russell. Because he gave a masterclass in how a fly half should be up on the line, creating. And George, bless him, I like the lad. He seems a good, honest player. But he is just too deep, and he needs to get up flatter.
Look, as we said, the teams are now targeting that start our play. Leicester didn't do anything particularly exciting in terms of defensive structures on Saturday. It was just blitz. It was just blitz, and we couldn't cope with it. And I thought, and I just want to quickly reiterate, and I come to Jim in a second. The one thing I want to reiterate in all the games that we've played this season where we've lost. So whether that's the Sarries defeat where we created a lot but didn't finish, the Bath game where we just kind of fell off a cliff in terms of our performance, I can't sort of pick out players having necessarily bad games. There's no one instantly going, do you know what? They had a shocker there. Everyone seems to be trying. They're trying hard.
Oh,
They're
we
definitely
never
doing.
question their effort that they put
No,
in. They're just not good enough. That's the trouble.
But again, I don't even think it's a case. Yeah, I understand what you mean, not good enough. I mean,
It's not individually skill based. That is the
no,
problem.
it's a
There
structure.
is
There's
no player
structural, isn't it?
that
Let's
you
be honest.
say they're out of their depth. Even the Barton, I don't think he's going to be, getting signed up for England anytime soon. He's not there yet. He's still learning, but he's not looking out of his depth.
Oh no, not at all. I just would
No.
like him flatter, that's all. That's my only
Yeah, real
real
want everyone to
criticism of him, to be
improve,
honest.
don't we? Yeah, we want everyone to get better. We want, a lot more of our loose forwards and our second rows to suddenly step up and be ball carriers and actually hit the line with a bit of pace. I mean, God, and it happened again on Saturday. We're not hitting the game line with pace. But I thought our physicality was superb. I thought every single contact we made, whether in defence or attack, we seemed to dominate. We were dominating in defence. We were dominating in attack. We were breaking the game line, albeit not a lot. We had pretty good opportunity for quick ball because of it, and we did absolutely nothing with it.
Yeah, that's not a vintage Leicester side we played either.
Oh no, they were awful. They
Yeah.
were terrible.
That's the first bonus point win they've had this season.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised because they're shit.
Well, to be fair, I mean, look, realistically, right? They shouldn't have had that bonus point in the end.
Oh goodness, no.
We copped around with we won the ball back from their line out. We then pissed around with it for 15 seconds, and Leicester dove over and scored. They got the bonus point. I mean, it was farcical, really, at the end. I just going back to you mentioned about players not hitting the line. I mean, it's been the case for a couple of seasons, certainly since Skivington's come in, and it might be a bit before. But how routinely do we moan about the fact that players are taking the ball stood still? And you compare that to, say, Leicester or Bath or Saracens, where they're taking the ball at pace from depth, and
Picking
that's a coach,
really good lines to
and
avoid
supporting them,
contact.
and also supporting those lines. For example, Alemano went through on Saturday, really great run through, and within 2 seconds he's looking left, right, trying to find anybody. No one's anywhere near him,
They don't seem to practice that in training. They can't, they.
well, again, it has to be a coaching issue. That not being able to take the ball on at
Well, I
pace from
mentioned this.
depth.
So I
So
mentioned this
fundamental,
at the
isn't
time,
it?
right? If Chris Ashton was on that pitch, he'd have been on Alemano's shoulder in an instant because that's what he does.
Yeah.
He runs hard and supports players, and he does it 90 times in a game where the player doesn't get through or doesn't have the opportunity to pass or just gets a secondary tackle and goes to ground. But on 10 occasions, he's on the shoulder and extends the break, scores tries. And we just seen that. And I don't quite understand why Zamit's not doing that, because Zamit is the quickest man in the league and he should be working incredibly hard, not just chasing kicks, but supporting potential breaks. And I get the feeling that he's just not been given any ball and he's a bit pissed off and maybe he's not, his head's not quite there with Gloucester at the minute.
It's a weird one, possibly. I mean, it's a weird one though with Zamit, because I get that whole idea and I understand why people make the point about the fact that we want him to be more involved, looking for work, looking for the ball. And he might want to, but if you look at what he's actually doing, which is, as you say, chasing kicks and occasionally getting the ball out wide to try and do something special, that to me, again, seems like a structural attacking issue rather than a player not wanting to find work.
Yeah, I want him out wide in space because that's where he's at his most dangerous.
Yeah, and again, that's the thing, isn't it? If you've got someone like Ollie Thorley, for example, who probably suits that play, that thing of hitting the line, so doing the cheat code, you know, doing the cheat line and supporting the break. Mm. But again, it seems to be that players are often doing that almost despite the game plan, despite what they're being told in terms of their coaching. And I think you really raised the biggest issue, though, which is the defence. Our defence at the moment is absolutely appalling. Like, you go through 6, 7, 8 phases, you might not score a try, right? So we were able to maybe resist in those situations. We're giving penalties away. Yeah. And daft penalties.
Well, 30 seconds into the game on Saturday, bunk, vantage. I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. Like, do you need here to be go. Offside? Do you need to be offside on your 22? No. And we were repeatedly offside. And then when we get into anywhere near the goal line, I mean, it's like, you know, unless you knock the ball on, you're going to get 3 attempts at it because we're going to give penalties away for offside. Mm. And it's routine now. So do you, just as a more positive stuff, we'll just quick try and focus.
Actually, can I just throw a question at you that you've thrown at us?
Yeah.
And that's what, because we never really touched on what your thoughts are, what needs to be done to put it right. Because you've asked us what we need to do, what our thoughts are on how to put it right.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts, Ed?
So my thoughts changed after the Bath game. I've been reticent, I think, to change coaches, certainly mid-season, because I don't think it's generally a positive move. It's very rarely that it works. However, I was extremely annoyed, borderline angry, with the response that George Kivington gave after the Bath game about we looked good in the warm-up. I thought that was about as farcical you can have as a response ever. And I just feel that now, the more and more we go on, when are we going to win a game again? We've won. And now I'm looking at it from more of a generic statistical thing, because my brain does go that way. We've won 5 games in the last calendar year in the league.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable. And I've seen some people on social media, Shedweb in particular, saying, oh, there's an entitlement to Gloucester supporters that we should be winning every week. Yeah, there fucking well is. This is Gloucester rugby. And I know we call ourselves Cherry Jam and it is jam tomorrow. But fundamentally, we're Gloucester rugby. We're one of the biggest rugby clubs in the country. We should not be accepting back-to-back bonus point defeats at home. It's not acceptable. The performances aren't good enough. The recruitment hasn't been good enough and the coaching isn't good enough. And that all comes down to, now, 4 years in, one man, and that man is George Skivington. So I would say, if personally, I think it's done. There's not really much we can get out of this season. We've only got 11 games left in this season. That's just to put that out there. We've only got 11 league games left because it's a very curtailed season, short season. We're already 11 points back behind fourth. So that's, you know, where are you gonna win three games, right? Yeah, you're gonna have to catch up three games of those 11 to get into a position. Then you're thinking, well, okay, Champions Cup. Well, Champions Cup only goes down to sixth now.
Is it?
Yep, only top six.
Eighth.
No, top six.
Okay, that's fine.
So there we are. There's another thing. Or even top eight. So you're saying, okay, top eight. So we've got
it was top
to finish.
Eight, but we could be wrong.
But yeah, but even if it's top eight, we're already. I think we're already 5 points behind eight.
Which was that, Bristol?
Sorry, we're 1 point behind Bristol. Sorry, I apologize. One behind by Bristol. We're 5 points behind Leicester now.
Right.
If you take it as a whole, right? So what's the game? The goal is always win the league, right? We ain't going to do that. So then the next thing is, are we going to get in the top four? No. Are we going to get the Champions Cup? Maybe if we had a really good run of form, which where's the evidence that's going to happen?
Well, quite.
You know,
do we want to be?
Well, I mean, yes, because there's a monetary bonus to that. I mean,
although they've said there's not,
but there is.
It's basically
there is. I'm sorry, but that's
one competition's got a number of sponsors, another one hasn't.
Yeah, that's what you say when you're trying to, you know, massage the bad news.
But you failed to qualify for it. Yeah, tactically, what could we do different then, Ed?
So I think the biggest thing we need to do differently in defence, personally, is to compete at the rucks. We need to slow ball down. Our defensive structure is based on we're going to make you run with the ball a lot and hope to God that you drop it. That's it. There's no other explanation for the defensive structure as it stands. So we have to slow the ball down, because what happened against Bath was we had 45, 50 minutes of really good intensity, but eventually you get knackered and we haven't got the depth to keep that going for an entire game. And even against Leicester this week, got to about 55 minutes and we fell off a cliff again intensity-wise. We just don't have that ability to do it. So what's the easiest solution is to slow the ball down, which is compete at the rucks. Not every ruck, clearly, but you've got to compete at the rucks. There was one on Saturday, I'm not blaming Fraser for this, but it's the best example I can give. So Fraser makes a tackle.
Yep.
He's immediately bounced up. Really good technique. He's up straight away from making that tackle. The ball is there to be won. And you could see him thinking, right, do I go? No, I won't. And even just competing, not even necessarily winning the ball, but competing in that situation slows the ball down by a second, maybe 1.5 seconds.
Yeah.
That means your defensive line it can get in position and then go again. It's small stuff, and we just don't seem to compete at the rucks. Attacking-wise, I don't know. I think maybe we've just got to work. What's the easiest way to beat a blitz? Inside ball.
Yeah.
You've got to allow your 10 to try stuff, like kicks over the top.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you cross your kicks,
there
maybe.
There was so much space. There was so much space in behind Leicester. The winger or the fullback was way, way, way back. There was probably 40 to 50 metres of space, and just a little chip over the top, sort of 20 metres in, it'll probably run to 30. Yeah, would have really changed things up and potentially brought that player further forward because they're nervous about the chip. And then you put them in that, maybe the 50-20 is on and things like that. So you just, but we kept putting it down the throat of Freddie Stewart. I mean,
that just baffles me as well. You remember, three years ago, wasn't it?
He knocked one on because we gave him 100, and that's how good he is. He's 99% accurate.
But it was what makes me laugh to him about that is, remember it must have been three years ago, where we played them for the first time. Freddie Stewart played against us for the first time, two, 3 years' time. And all we did all game that game was just put it up, put it up, put it up, put it up, put it up.
Yeah.
And he was
what
immense.
What did you say, Ed?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, right, well, we don't do that again, clearly. You're not going to give the best fullback in the world under the high ball 100 goes at kicking the high ball.
Why not?
It's just like, I mean, that's to say, so Jim made the point, right? Okay, or if you're going to do it, if you're going to go box kick crazy, right? Like we did, okay, against one of the best teams at it. Because if you look at the way Leicester do it, we don't like Ben Youngs for England, but he was superb on Saturday for Leicester, absolutely brilliant. I think there were a couple where he put it a little bit too far, but pretty much every box kick was on the money. He controlled it really well. Looked, you know, he made a massive difference, certainly towards the end of the game. And if you're going to do it, you do what Leicester did, which was they got the box kick set up within 2 seconds, 3 seconds. We were doing it and it was taking 10, 15 seconds. And Freddie Stewart sat at the back going, right.
I reckon when he dropped that ball, he got bored and waited.
Well, the point we made, so Jim and I were in the shed and we were, afterwards talking about it. And we were saying that at times, Freddie Stewart, by the time he caught the ball, he had about a second and a half to go, right, do I go left? Do I go right? What am I having for tea tonight? I think I might go out to Cheltenham tonight. I think the boys are going to Cheltenham tonight. Yeah, man. Oh, I better do something now. Whereas when Santi got the ball, and to be fair to him, Santi did a great job fielding the Leicester kicks. I mean, he was just as adept at it. But as soon as he landed, he was landing within players. He had nowhere to go. It baffles me, because there's the argument: oh, the players need to learn. The players need to decide. This isn't what we've done all week. Well, okay, if that's not what they've done all week, you do have a half time to tell them to stop doing what they've been doing.
Yeah. I saw something on, I forget where it was, it might have been on social media, and it was, what law would you get rid of? And it was the multiple choice. It was either the caterpillar box kick or something else.
Yeah.
And I instantly thought caterpillar, because if you get rid of a caterpillar, you'll reduce the amount of box kicks instantly. Because without that protection. And ours was beginning, had so many people in it at one point, it was beginning to look like the human centipede, honestly. It was terrible how many we had to set ours up on Saturdays. It's just ridiculous. So I think they should get rid of that caterpillar, and then you find that you'd have a lot less box kick, and your game would then be a lot more entertaining straight away, because you'd move away from this box kicking tennis that you tend to get. Well, it would certainly take that away as a tactic.
Well, on that then, Loz, rather than outlawing it, because it would be quite difficult to outlaw, I say all you need to do is, when the ball is playable, you say play it and you do your countdown, which is starting to happen with some of the more confident referees.
Yeah, twice against but Saracens, also, wasn't it? Yeah.
Or in addition, you bring in a directive, because it is still the law. It's already there. But you bring in a directive that if a player disengages the shoulder from the player in front in that caterpillar, then they are not bound. Therefore, if the ball is beyond them, the ball is out. So all you do is, as they're creating this big long caterpillar, you get a couple of guys smash the ruck. There's going to be that reverberation around, and there will be a disconnect, because it's only one shoulder to one arse. It's not like double stacked or triple stacked. It's only single file queue. So as soon as that player's shoulder comes away from the player in front and the ball's gone behind them, the ball is out, and we've got a seven or someone coming in, jumping on the ball. So it could be quite easily, you don't have to change the laws. You just have to tweak how it's officiated, I think. Because like we've seen it a little bit, haven't we, with you know, with players saying, use it, 3, 2, 1, blow whistle, turnover. But, you know, we just want a quicker game.
Yeah, well, if they were to enforce that, making sure the ball was out a lot quicker, that would stop the caterpillar, because the ball gets stuck in the player's feet when the scrum house is trying to roll it along the ground with his boot to then, before he picks it up, because obviously if he does it with his hands, the ball is deemed to be out then, isn't it? It's two hands on, ball's out.
I think the other solution...
Only when the ball is lifted, Loz. But if the nine plays the ball with their hand and then releases the ball with their hand, then the ball is deemed to be out. So it's a bit of a weird one. If they keep their hand on it as they're kind of trying to roll it backwards, then it is deemed still in. But then that's not one that gets officiated very often either.
So, I mean, the other solution, I think, Loz, you mentioning, which you referenced, is the idea that we would, any kick fielded within a half is a mark. And that would kill the box kick. party straight away, because the odds of you being able to retain that kick are minimal. So, you know, most of the back three now are able to feel these kicks pretty comfortably.
Yeah, take the mark, quick tap, everyone needs to be back 10, go, go, go.
Yeah, so I think that probably would... And then the only stipulation is if you do take a mark, you can't take a scrum, because that's boring as hell. So that's probably...
And actually, with that, I think that's a good law that they should bring in, that if you've just been given a penalty or a free kick from a scrum, you can't nominate another scrum.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the scrum, as great a thing as it is just a means of restarting the game.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a penalty-driven thing, should it?
It does feel as though that would be penalising a side that would had a dominant scrum, though.
Yes, but
what the rugby shouldn't be about a dominant scrum in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, if you've got a scrum 5 meters out, you're what you're basically saying there is you've got one crack at the pushover, because if there's another penalty, if the team drop it, they know that then you wouldn't be able to take the scrum.
Well, that's where referees just need to give penalty tries on the first offense.
That's an interesting point, though, Lars, because that's an interesting point, though. When was the last time you saw a pushover try from a scrum?
Well, yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
That's a really good point, though. But the fact that you've got one crack at it, but then maybe that will allow. So you do get a proper, full on, you know, monster scrum. And then, as Jim said, if you get a good shove on, a ref is then in a really difficult position and might start awarding penalty tries. So that does maybe
you'd immediately give a penalty away straight away if they selected a scrum. Teams just won't go for a scrum anymore, because if you've only got one crack at it as a defence, you know all you got to do is just drop it straight away. Penalty against you again. They're going to be taking the 3 points potentially, or kicking for the line out.
Yeah, I think longer term teams probably wouldn't get away with it. They might on the first offence, but yeah. I think if it were to happen the second or the third time, we'd be talking
yellow card territory.
Anyway, we digress.
But to be fair, you're right. So it's a really good point to raise, and thank you for asking me. I know normally I ask you guys, and it's actually nice to get this off my chest. Actually, there's a few things that I've noticed on social media in particular. Just a kind of aside to, how poor Gloucester are at the moment and the coaching. And one thing I think is really important to say, and it's daft that we have to say this, personal attacks on coaches or players is not on. But I have noticed on social media, a good one is Louis Rees-Sammet, lots of people saying, oh, get rid, he doesn't care, he's not interested, blah, 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 blah. What, because you've watched a documentary or that you've heard that he's got French teams after him? You mean... French teams who are clearly interested in one of the best wingers in world rugby. I mean, it's
ludicrous, isn't it?
It's the mentality of some supporters about that it's now, you know, because they can't blame the coach because they've really gone in hard and they love George Skivington. So they're going to blame the players, but they can't really blame the players because they love favourite players. And it's just, look, how about we just accept at the moment Gloucester is just not good enough. And therefore, there has to be a reckoning there. Now, either the players who have been awarded contracts aren't up to scratch. That's perfectly a legitimate thing to say. But as people and as professionals, they're trying their hardest.
Yeah.
That's fine. We can say that. But let's just tone down the rhetoric around certain players, and let's tone down the rhetoric around like personal stuff around the coaches. The coaches are trying their hardest. We just don't think they're up to it. It's just one of those things. It happens. Right. I think... It's so difficult to keep going about a negative, negative, negative. We will try and have a pod in a few weeks' time where we're just not even talking about the current situation, and we'll just find something fun to talk about, because otherwise we'll all lose the will to live. Anyway, one thing we can talk about, Jim, and after this brief break, is we will talk about the women. And Loz, you can add your 2p in. I know you watch it occasionally and you see things, but just more generally about what it means for the positivity around the club. Right, so Jim and I stayed after the men's game yesterday and held on to watch the women. Gloucester Heartbreaks kicked off their new campaign, defending champions, obviously, and that's the first thing we have to say. And I think it was all over us a contest after about 15 minutes, Jim, against Leicester Tigers, who are new to the league.
Yeah, it was always going to be a tough ask, I think, for Leicester to kind of build a squad, really, because there's not a huge depth of quality of women players, certainly in England and in the UK at the moment. And I don't know when they got the green light to say that they were going to be in this new league. But obviously there's them and Ealing that have come in with the sort of demise of Wasps, and Worcester have recently gone, and we've picked up a few, and other teams have picked up a few. But there's not a huge amount of players, especially when you look at the likes of Gloucester, who have actually recruited and got stronger, and the likes of Bristol, who have definitely recruited really well and got significantly stronger. So,
although they got thumped today, just important to note.
Well, yeah, I did watch that. I wouldn't say thumped, but they were well beaten by Exeter. Who were another really strong side. So it was a very entertaining game. I called it when they very first announced the fixtures that it was a real shame that the women were on after.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was far more of a shame following the fact that their male counterparts were so comprehensively beaten, so nobody wanted to hang around and they just left sharpish. It'd be quite interesting to see the data actually on pubs and curry houses and such like, and how much they make when we win compared to how much when we lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have imagined there may have been a few more hundred people willing to hang around if we'd have won. They'd have just naturally felt a bit warmer and more comfortable. And sort of been willing to hang around with the people that they're with and chat some more. But either way, those that left missed out. It was really, really good. Really, really good game. I was actually quite impressed. I mean, to be fair, the crowd wasn't horrendous.
No, it got better as the game kicked off, because people obviously were in the bars keeping warm.
I think that was kind of quite noticeable, that when the game kicked off, it did look quite poor. And probably 10 minutes later, like you say, it was pretty cold, about 2 or 3 degrees, I think. So understandable that people that maybe didn't really appreciate how cold it would be, that were underdressed, went and warmed up a bit inside. But yeah, we absolutely dominated possession, dominated the physicality, all the contact area, all the running was Gloucester Hartbury. The speed of play. I mean, honestly, you mentioned it actually, Ed, didn't you? Wouldn't it be nice if the guys were coming to watch? But they could definitely learn something. And the lines of running, the speed of service, really, really quick ruck ball. And as you were sort of mentioning earlier, when Leicester had the ball, they did not get easy, quick ruck ball, because rucks were being competed against and the ball was being slowed down, and they were being very good at, when the opportunity is there, turn it over. When the opportunity is not there, slow it down a little bit, then fan out, ready to go for the next one. And the first half was an absolute masterclass.
Yes. Yeah. First 40 was really, really impressive. I think there's even a couple of that maybe that they left out there in terms of scores. What I found impressive really was the fact that it was the intensity when you go up 28 points to nil, that you don't sometimes see it in the men, that they just drop off at that point after 25, 30 minutes. But the girls, they kept going really till about 55, 60 minutes. And at that point, changes, see, I think it
there,
did.
There are a lot of changes.
Yeah, a lot of changes. And I always noticed when Mo.
They were going point a minute in the first half, weren't
they? They were going point a minute.
Was it 14-0?
Yeah, 14-0 at half time. Yeah. And what I would say is that, that again, there were some really good performances. I thought Emma Singh, once again, superb. Mo had a great game as always. Maud Muir was really good.
Yeah. I mean, Emma's kicking is very, very
good. Yeah, really good.
She slotted a couple of touchline conversions.
Yeah.
She, like, you know, proper good accuracy. Because I think her international kind of percentages aren't that great. because pretty much every conversion she's taken for England has been on the touchline. So
yeah,
she's doing well. She's doing very well.
Yeah, and it's just a pleasure to watch some decent rugby. I mean, I think the one thing we noticed again was the fact that there's so little kicking. I mean, there's an element of biological element of that the girls don't kick as much because it's more challenging for them, but actually it leads to a better game because they're able to, you know, they're running at line, they're running speed and pace. And Loz has given me weird looks because I'm saying that maybe women aren't quite as strong at kicking than men. That's just more of a, you know,
if you're not going to be able to kick the ball far enough, then you're not going to be kicking the ball as much, are you? Because you're only going to give away possession with on top of you.
Well, this was really, really noticeable. So I went to Hartbury today to watch the Centre of Excellence team play against Sales, apparently Centre of Excellence. I might have to be in inverted commas because that was even more one-sided. But
what was the final score to that game, by the way?
Well, they didn't announce it particularly. I think it was 52-7.
Okay.
But Gloucester did give Sale two players and take off pretty much all their players in the second half.
Oh.
So the second half, I think, was like 12-7 to Gloucester, whereas it was like 40-0 in the first half, I think, or thereabouts. But yeah, there was a couple of kicks that, like, from a kick from hand that maybe went 10 meters, and you think that really wasn't worthwhile. But also, there was a scrum nomination from a penalty pretty much on the 22.
Really?
And you think, Why would you be doing that, Sale? Because I think they got driven off that. there was another. And the tap and goes, like, literally, like, unless the penalty was kind of 10 meters out from touch, so then they kick to the corner. Any further infield, and you just tap and go because you can probably run it as far as you kick it, and then you haven't got the lottery of the line out. But yeah. It was really, really good to see that, you know, these are predominantly Hartbury College students as well. I think a couple of kind of relatively recent leavers or maybe other local colleges and universities, but they're kind of under 23 kind of level. And there were some real standout performances. A couple of bits of selfishness and butchery that you're always going to get at that kind of level. But yeah. Entertaining all the same, and clearly they're gonna you know, filter through, and as and when there's international call ups and injuries and such like, they'll be filling in bench slots for the Gloucester Hartbury first 15 for sure.
So I mean, Loz, I know you are someone who you engage in the women's game, but yeah, I think it's only fair to say you're not quite the level Jim and myself. But I think it's that's not a criticism. It's because
I'll explain my reasoning behind it. Is I find at the moment it's not competitive enough across the board.
No,
the games are highly skilled and enjoyable to watch. Don't get me wrong. I find that with most women's sport as well. It has to be said that you'll have. We're still at an infancy in all women's sport at the top level, it seems, because you'll have many stuffings as opposed to in men's sport where it's more of a freak result. The games, you know, 50, yeah. 60 points to next to nothing tends to happen quite regularly. In women's, whereas it tends to not so much in women's football,
you'll get a 10-0, won't you?
There was a 13-0,
I think, in the women's SFL today. I think.
Yeah, well, the French beat the Malta 14-0, didn't they? Mbappe scored a few, but
Gibraltar.
Gibraltar. So you do get those results, yeah. But you're looking at your Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0. That was just a freak result. That wasn't just a regular occurrence or anything like that. You know, so you tend to find, however, in women's sport, it tends to be a bit more. There aren't enough teams at the standard that we would like for it to be competitive. You only got to look at that Wasps and Durham, whatever it was, Park, whatever they were called last year, both of them conceding over 1,000 points in the women's league.
Yeah.
And there's already been a 90 pointer scored this season. I think Saracens, didn't they? They scored 90 odd against someone earlier. So it's just frustrating from that point of view, but it certainly can't take anything away from the skill set and the enjoyable side of the game to watch. Because as you said, that certainly from a rugby point of view, there's far less kicking in it. But when the standard across the board, that league becomes as competitive as what the men's is, then I will certainly show more of an interest in it.
I think thank you. I appreciate that. That's a really good point that I think we both share as well. But more generally, that the positivity for Gloucester is that there is another string to this, that we've got a successful women's team, but we've also got teams below that are definitely going to be maintaining that success for a few years to come. I mean, and that's can only be a positive thing.
Oh, it's brilliant that we're in this position, and it's so it's just wonderful to be able to enjoy having a team that is so good at the moment, and potentially set up for future success as well. I'm sorry for going back to about the men's game, but when Gloucester have been good in the past, you've never thought that they had in place for it to become a dynasty.
No.
Whereas
this is the thing,
the women hopefully
maybe
will be.
We thought maybe with with a link up with Hartbury and the strength of rugby at Hartbury, we thought that maybe we would have this constant conveyor belt coming through Hartbury, Hartbury College University, Hartbury RFC as our kind of feeder semi-professional championship club. And then they'd be stepping up in being in our academy. But I think because of the salary cap, then a lot of those players that maybe get a great rugby education at Hartbury, they're getting offers from all over. Whereas actually because of the finances involved in the women's game, as a club like Gloucester Hartbury, you can just go, we'll give you a job in our community department, or if you got a job with one of our sponsors, or we've got people that will help you get a job that still gives you the time to do the training, and you can be a semi-pro or amateur level, but still put in the hours to train like a semi-pro. Then actually that's why the circus has got the size it is, because the draw is, why would you not want to be a part of that? Because you're not going to get paid anymore going in somewhere else.
Things
so
like
you may as well get you may as well get you may as well get paid you may as well get paid a poor salary and play for a winning side, which is quite sad for the likes of your Sales and the teams that I think Loughborough lost again, so they're not getting that feed into them that maybe Gloucester women are, which is great. Don't get me wrong.
Let's be fair. Is it, look, we were struggling and suffering under the sort of current mediocre performances of the men's team. So let's just really embrace how good the women are at the moment. And that's really good to see. One thing I did mention yesterday when we were watching the game, but there was, and I was trying to remember exactly where I saw it, there is talk of around the Champions Cup final weekend this year at Tottenham, there is talk of an invitational first championship game for women's European rugby. And it was referenced in an article in City AM, which have got some decent leads in on the rugby. What it would be, it was an invitational game between Stade Bordelais and Gloucester. So I don't think it's been finalised. I've not heard anything since this, but that's apparently in the works, and that would be fantastic, because not only could Gloucester be, obviously the first team that from Gloucester to ever win a national championship, we could be European champions by the end of by
we could
by
be
May,
the first
June.
Ever women's European champion.
First ever European champions. Let's just embrace
would it,
that.
Would it be a really crappy cup that the following year they make really big and special? like they did with the men's?
Possibly. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, look, it gives me an excuse to, because let's be fair, there's no real chance of us getting to the Challenge Cup final, realistically. I mean, we're going to have
definitely no chance of us celebrating success there.
No. But, you know, let's hope that the women can get involved in some way, and we can have a night out in Tottenham. What could be better, eh?
At least we'll be able to drink plenty of gamma ray at the stadium.
That's true. Yeah, actually, that's the one big benefit of Spurs. They've got a lovely brewery underneath Beavertown, and they make good beer. I mean, it still does make me laugh though, that you would serve gamma ray at a football stadium and you only get 10 minutes to drink it.
It's not an interesting one, isn't it?
Not sure that's a good idea. Anyway, but no, yeah, more generally though, let's try and finish on a positive. There is generally some good things that are happening at the club. I think the what they've tried to do with the 150th anniversary, I think, has been very good. Mm. Been very well received. I know there's ongoing fan engagement around things that they're going to go do later in the year. But what we really want is a winning team. Sorry, Jim, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I just think one thing that maybe I think the marketing team may have got a little bit wrong in the last week or so is season ticket holders, members having the ability to get significantly discounted home and away shirts.
Oh, now, yeah, rather than the beginning of the season.
And I think,
yeah,
you know, Black Friday is a very American thing that we seem to have jumped upon. Mm. But, you know, let's do it like Amazon do it, and let's just make up some heavy discounts on stuff that has been knocking around in the back of the warehouse that we want rid of. I don't think we shouldn't be underselling the current home and away jersey on the run up to Christmas. Because I think, like, it's November. We're only 2 months into the season. Like, don't discount the home jersey or the away jersey until Easter. I just don't think it's right, because people would have bought that in September. They might have bought it in October. And to now be chucking 20 quid or 25 quid off or whatever it is, I just think that's... I
didn't actually buy one year because I was waiting for the discounts for them to knock it down in price. They never actually did, because they'd done that the year before. So exactly. I didn't actually buy one. What I might have to get one of you guys to do is to sort a shirt out on your season ticket for me. So, and I'll send you the money, because
I think that deal.
I think it ends tomorrow, doesn't it?
No, yeah, it runs out at midnight probably.
Yeah, it's tomorrow. It ends tomorrow, but not midnight. Tomorrow, if you know what I mean. So I think it ends tomorrow. So you've got one more day lost.
I've got last season's shirt, so I don't.
That's a really good point.
At the end of the season, I'll probably get it when it's reduced. Just so I got a 150-year shirt. That's all.
Mm. Oxen are really good at producing more and more kit throughout the season. So they'll drip feed all the off-field stuff and some of the on-field kind of technical, like the training tees and the training vests and stuff like that. So you end up with new stuff coming out and potentially discounted older stuff.
Yeah.
Like which is fine. I'd much rather have the choice of 10 different designs of t-shirt and polo shirt than just a couple. That makes perfect sense. Just don't undervalue the actual
I think more importantly as well, if you're gonna offer a discount for season ticket holders, do it at the beginning of the season as well. Yeah. Because there isn't a lot of value to the season ticket outside of you get your tickets cheaper.
You always used to have a discount. The season ticket automatically gave 10% off.
You get 10% off or 10 off or whatever it would be. Yeah, they don't do that anymore. And again, I think that's little things like that need to be looked at. I mean, we'll be getting the release of the European shirt in the next week, I would have thought, because obviously we're only a couple of weeks away from our first foray into European rugby. So that'll
come with a whole range, won't it?
You'd imagine so. It's going to be, for those who don't know, it's going to be very similar to the one a couple of years ago, what we would call Cinderford colours, Gloucester Old Boy colours, black, gold and red. And the sort of image we've
seen... As long as it's not the stripe thing, like it was.
No, no, not the football one, not the horrible football thing. No, apparently it's the image that we've seen. It looked good. So, and I think to be fair, the kits have looked good this season. One final thing, just on going back to the women, actually, Jim, and you made the point about there has to be a way to make it that the women play first. If you're going to do a double header, there has to be a way of, logistically, you must be at a way of doing it, because it seems like a really big missed opportunity where you can get the women are playing, people get into the ground early, you're selling pints, you're selling food, you've got kids in the ground early to watch the women. And as the crowd fills up, the atmosphere builds, there's hopefully going to be women winning rugby.
Yeah, it'd be quite simple to do when we're not on television. There's always that restriction this week that the game was, we were a televised match on Saturday. So a simple solution would be the women play at 2:30 and the men play at 5:30. That would be the other way around. But obviously that was reliant on us not being on television.
I would say we don't want 3 hours between the games. Like 2:30 and 5:30 is too much.
Well, the men are going to want 3/4 hour to an hour to warm up, aren't they?
Well, that's why I think they need to do that. And that's the problem. They need to find somewhere else to do it. And also, actually, there is the potential issue, of course, that some people might have a season ticket for the women.
I think that's a very minimal issue. I don't think it's a
women's season ticket only.
Yeah, I think people who've only got a women's season ticket, we're talking a handful, Jim. I don't really see that's an issue. And from a value point of view, if you are somebody, right, who bought a women's only season ticket, you get a men's ticket included.
That's what I'm getting at, because basically the gates are open, aren't they? As was on Saturday when the women came on, the gates were open and anyone can come in. So it's a free game.
Yeah.
So it you would have to kind of run it somehow, like, I don't know.
Well, you just know it's a ticketed game. I mean,
if you've got a ticket for it, you get in. This one's a bonus.
It's a ticketed game. Because let's be honest, there weren't many people who joined the crowd after the final whistle on Saturday from the men's game. There were, I mean, if anyone walked into the ground after that just to watch the women's game, I'll be amazed. Because it was freaking cold. And why the hell would you want to come into a place which sells beer at £6.50?
What?
Guinness is £6.50.
£6.50 a pint.
Yeah. Yeah, which we will come on to. Someone who's asked us before about, we'll do a pod around the finances of rugby, which we will come on to, because, as I said, it was released again.
£6.50?
£6.50 for a pint of Guinness, mate. Yeah. And you can see why people don't necessarily want to buy alcohol in the ground.
And now we're talking about it.
Go on.
So I went, I entered in the Tumpend grandstand corner, because I parked my bike up in the bike shed, which is overflowing, by the way, Gloucester Rugby. It would be nice if you extended it rather than building a smoking shelter next to it that looks like it could be a really good bike shed. So I entered there, and the bars, like, there's a crappy bar there anyway, like pop-up thing.
Yeah.
But it was rammed. So I'm like, right, I'm not going to bother with that. So I did my usual walk into the shed and then along the shed. And then I was like, actually, no, I will get a pint. So then I went to the bar under the Stouffer press stand.
Yeah, yeah, at the back.
That was even more rammed with super huge queues.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it can't physically be that busy in the Lion's Den. So I'll pop in there. So I jumped in the Lion's Den. And in the Lion's Den, they've got two members of staff that are clearly managers, because they're just laughing and joking and hugging each other for about a quarter of an hour. But if they are managers, what I'd quite like them to have done is asked the staff that are behind the bar to pour pints. Yeah. This is now, I actually thought the game kicked off at 3:05. I didn't realise it kicked off at 2:30. So we're now like half an hour before kickoff. And the bar is rammed. Everyone wants their like final pint before they go and take their spot. And they've got the setup on the bar where you've got all the space and it's all labeled up. So you like pre-pour, put it on the bar, pre-pour, put it on the bar. Right. Then they're not pre-pouring Guinness, which is like, it's a staple. That's the one you're supposed to pre-pour.
Yeah.
So they're not doing that. And I'm like, can I get a Guinness, please? Oh, yeah. And she just, and then she starts pouring it. I'm like, really? But you've got all these other taps that you're not pouring. It's like,
so to give you a bit of interesting, it's interesting the difference between the Lion's Den, which is a smaller place, it's a smaller space and a smaller bar, and also I don't think the traffic around that bar doesn't help. You get a lot of people stood around it, which means queues appear to be longer than they're not, and all the rest of it. But if you go to the other side, so you go onto the whatever it's called, I don't know what it's called, Stoford Clubhouse. I don't know what it's called.
Malvern Tyres. Days.
Malvern Tyres Clubhouse.
Stand.
Whatever.
Malvern Tyres Stand. Underneath yeah. Malvern Tyres Stand.
Underneath
the grandstand.
Underneath the grandstand.
The show bar.
The show, whatever the hell it's called. Anyway, that underneath there is, they do have that system and it does work well. If you ever walk, go to get a pint, it does move pretty quickly.
Yeah, but there's a lot of staff there.
There's a lot of staff.
And it doesn't stink of creosote either, like the show. Like the Lion's Den seem to.
It doesn't, no.
Oh, yes. It just smells of canapes because it's so bloody lovely.
Yeah, well, but just to add, and just, yeah, so I know where you're coming from. I think there's a few other things. We will talk about the finances of rugby because, look, they came out again this week. £71 to stand behind the goal in the rain at the Rec, which is disgraceful.
£71.
It's 40 quid to stand in the shed on Saturday, which, let's be honest, is ridiculous. Full disclaimer, I'm not going to the Bristol game on Saturday. I could have done because it's down the road. I can get down there really easily. You know, they've got a good setup, park and ride and all the rest of it.
I was keen.
Yeah, the ticket prices are ridiculous.
And the women, I thought, were playing.
They're playing Friday. They're playing Friday at Dings, yeah.
So I'm like, no, why would you throw away the opportunity to have a double header? And why would you make it so cost prohibitive that people don't want to go?
No,
it's on TV though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But I'm not going to the rugby. I'm going down to Southampton, 50 quid for me and my godson to sit between the penalties box and the halfway line. That's for both of us. I mean, I know it's football, right? I'm aware it's football. It's Southampton as well, so it's championship football. But, you know, it's
not even good football, either.
No, it is ridiculous. I'm not that. For dear listeners, like, it's not as if I'm going to have any more positive experience on a Saturday. I am watching Southampton. But I'm going, and then I bought a ticket on the way into the game on Saturday. I bought a ticket to watch Southampton play Coventry City away on the mid-December, so Wednesday night, and it's 30 quid. Plat, 30 quid. You know, don't get me wrong, you can probably get cheaper tickets if you go to some of these away games, but it's rare. And it's just, the value isn't there, I think, with rugby at the moment. I think we will come back to it and talk about it in a bit more depth.
Yeah, the product's not good enough, is it, at the moment?
No, it's just not good enough. It's too, I mean, there's so much around the finances, which we need to look at in a bit more detail. Anyway, right. I don't know how we managed it. We've managed to get through that relatively quickly and without as much pain and suffering as I thought we were going to. Thank you.
Well,
boys.
Russ wasn't here, so we didn't have a huge amount of swearing either.
No.
I think you're the only one who's sworn in this podcast.
I think I swore as well.
You might have done. Yeah. All right, I think I'm the only one who hasn't sworn.
Yeah.
Well done.
Makes a change.
It does. But we've
got through this sort of quite quickly because we haven't talked. The performance is so bad. We didn't go into detail about the game, did we?
I don't think there's much point, though, is it? I mean, but again, listeners, like you people who would have watched the game, either on telly or
last thing we'll do is listen to us talk about it as well.
You don't need us ranging on. Look, we all know it's rubbish. We're hoping for a change, a positive change. We've got Bristol next weekend. Both teams now off the back of 5 consecutive defeats. So someone's gonna win unless we draw. That would be weird. And more importantly, there is silverware up for grabs.
Oh, the Rifles Cup.
The Rifles Cup.
Of so course.
Another trophy.
Bristol can have the Rifles Cup and Leicester
got the Slater Cup. So we've got the Rifles Cup up for grabs.
Let's be
you
fair,
never know.
The thing is, what concerns me is the way Bristol are playing. And that, they might have lost five on the trot, but they put in a good performance away against Saracens.
Yes, they did.
And got points
scored
up there.
Scored a lot of tries. And,
scored
yeah.
plenty of tries. Okay, they might have a defensive issue as well, like us, but we've still got a terrible attack, haven't we, as well, to go with it. So, my predictions, Ed?
I think if we got a losing bonus point, I think that's actually an improvement. I know we got one against Exeter, but we should have won that game, so I don't really count that. So I think a bonus point loss would be good. Jim?
Yep.
I think a bonus point loss would be good. I think. Do you know what? I thought we'd get well beaten by Exeter. And like you said, we should have won that game. And I think everyone agrees we should have won that game.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to go crazy because I'm ever the optimist. I'm going to say bonus point win for Gloucester.
I thought you were going to say two bonus points.
Bonus point win.
I think if we're going to beat them, we need to score
been
four
under
tries.
The cost before, they've kind of fallen apart a bit. They've possibly got even less confidence in themselves than we have.
They got that confidence of playing Gloucester, and if ever you're in a poor rut, we're the team to get you out of it. I think, as Jim's right, if we win, I think we'll probably win with the bonus point, because I think that's what we'll have to do to beat them, is score four tries. Because I don't think our defence is good enough to keep them out. My biggest fear is I don't think our attack is good enough to score enough tries for what we will. I think we'll probably concede. So I'm going with the same as Ed.
Losing bonus point. Well, I mean, as I said...
Well, my losing bonus point's actually probably a four-try
bonus
point.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. Right, on that note, I mean, look, let's try and be positive. It's I'm going to miss all of it. I'll be watching Southampton probably ruin my weekend instead. But I'm hoping when I get back in the car, I can hear some really good news from Ashton Gate. It'll be pleasant surprise.
Me too, will you? Because the WhatsApp will have been going off.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, because again, like St Mary's is horrific for signal, so I won't find out until I'm about half a mile away.
They don't have walking. Wi-Fi, don't they?
They do, but I don't have the code. unless someone wants to buy me a hospitality ticket and I can wangle the Wi-Fi that way. But anyway,
you didn't have the sense to get that when you had that football match, don't they?
They didn't have it on. anyway, right, on that note, thanks guys, really appreciate it. And Loz, good news, we've finished before 9.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.